This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. The RCMP caught drivers clocked up to 70 clicks over the posted speed limit in the Sydney area. A project in Iceland hits close to home, helping young people stay grounded. Keep your bones warm. There is a Sydney festival coming up to help you do that. A tow truck driver originally from here took gunfire while on the job in the GTA. The police are looking for some people who were handing out fake money in the CBRM. And we'll hear an interview from a series of the Coast Radio Station connecting with the Cape Breton Partnership. These stories are coming up on the Coast. A Cape Breton woman is raising money to help her 28-year-old nephew recover from a shooting in the Greater Toronto Area earlier this month. Patsy Leadbeater says her nephew Alex Leadbeater, originally from Cape Breton, is a tow truck driver in Scarborough. She says he enjoys the work, but it's more dangerous than most people think these days.
He's a father of two, and he's been a tow truck driver for many years, and he loves the job. He loves helping people. He likes being in the action and being able to assist people when they're, you know, having a hard day. And he was, he's in an industry that shouldn't be going through what they're going through right now in Toronto.
The Toronto Police Service has launched an investigation related to violence in the tow truck industry. They say there have been several shootings and arsons, which have been tied to ongoing territorial disputes within the tow truck industry. Leadbeater says her nephew was a shooting victim on January 9th when he was parked at a traffic light on the way to a call and then took cover when he heard gunshots.
He immediately went into the fetal position, and because of the previous shootings, he was wearing a bulletproof vest, and they've been doing that, and it's unfortunate that you have to do that when you're not, you know, police or ambulance or anyone really. So he went into fetal position, and he believes that he was shot until they emptied their clip, because there were possibly 18 rounds in the truck.
She says her nephew Alex told the police he heard as many as 18 shots, and he was hit by some of the bullets.
He got hit in the throat. It went in one end and out the other, so there was an entry and exit wound. And then he was grazed in the shoulder, and then another shot hit him in the vest around his heart. So fetal position and wearing the vest, he was a quick thinker, that's for sure. But he was shot 5 times.
She says her nephew later explained he was in a state of shock while trying to call for help, but he was able to exit the tow truck on his own.
He remembers calling 911, but he said he couldn't remember his password because he was trying to call 911. He got out of his truck, and there was a bus behind him, a TTC bus, and he got out of the truck, walked up to the bus, walked into the driver in front of him and said, "Am I bleeding?" That's all he remembers. And the driver just looked at him and said, just like an East Coaster might say, he said, "Buddy, you're bleeding everywhere."
Leadbeater says the family is relieved Alex is expected to make a full recovery from the injuries. She says the tow truck drivers in that part of the Greater Toronto Area are advised to wear bulletproof vests, and it's a relief. The young father bought one, as it was likely the difference between life and death.
And he bought it himself. You know, it was like a $300 or $400 purchase, but it saved his life. So, you know, he gets to see his kids again. And, you know, one of his sons has autism, and we were spending a lot of time with him. He's so smart and sweet. And Alex came down here to Nova Scotia to recover with his family. And now he's got to, you know, emotionally recover and then go back somehow. You know, his son is there. Right now, he doesn't have a job. He doesn't have a car. His son is out there, and he's, you know, paying, you know, his mom. And he's just not there. And that's why I set up the GoFundMe, was because he needs help. And that's what I'm trying to do.
She says there is a GoFundMe page set up. And she says there is a GoFundMe page that is set up, and it can be found if you search the name Patsy Leadbeater. It's getting some donations, but she hopes it picks up because he needs money to get back on his feet.
Right now, he doesn't have a job. He doesn't have a car. His son is out there, and he's, you know, paying, you know, his mom, and he's just not there. And that's why I set up the GoFundMe, was because, you know, it needs to help him, but it's not moving very quickly, which, you know, I know that it wasn't a fire and no one died, but, you know, he needs help, and That's what I'm trying to do.
The police say the tow truck industry has seen a troubling increase in gun violence. Last year, there were 63 shootings linked to the disputes within the tow truck industry, and they say the trend is continuing this year. The police have launched a new initiative called Project Dodger, which aims to improve safety for the tow truck operators and the public. The RCMP stopped three drivers on the 125 Sydney bypass over the stretch of 4 hours on January 27th. The drivers were clocked doing between 156 and 170 kilometers an hour. Their vehicles were impounded and they were each fined $2,500. Dialogue's Jacob Postaway interviews Constable Mike Francis.
So I saw the post on social media about I think it was three incidents in one night over on Highway 125. That's pretty crazy.
Yes. Yeah, the numbers have gone up since COVID and they didn't really come back down to where they used to be.
Yeah, so that was going to actually be my first question is, has there been a rise in speeding this year in particular?
I don't know that I wouldn't say that this year in particular, but I would say personally, all police jurisdictions noticed a dramatic increase during COVID. There were less cars on the road, but the drivers that were on the road were doing more, risky behaviors. There was more impaired driving, more speeding, and we were noticing it. Not just first, we were noticing it and thinking it was just our own problem, but then we noticed, OPP and other police forces across Canada, and then we noticed other police forces in the United States saying the same thing, that all this behavior went up because there were less cars, people were driving in a more risky manner, and they were going faster, more impaired, more of this dangerous behavior. So you would think that after that happened, COVID ended and more cars went back on the road, that things would have went back to kind of where they were, but it was kind of like a graph. It went back down a little bit, but it never went back to where it was despite the enforcement that's being done.
So it was kind of like a dramatic rise. It wasn't like, so, say that it was like steadily rising up until COVID, and then COVID hits and it's like a dramatic rise then.
Yeah, exactly. So it wasn't going up, I wouldn't say, in any respect before that. But again, once there were fewer cars on the road, people thought, hey, I can kind of drive how I want. There were days you'd go out there and there'd be very few cars whatsoever. So people would think, hey, I'm the only one on the road, so I'm going to do that risky driving behavior. We went from getting like one stunter every few months to, starting to get them every few weeks. And then we were getting them, like some of us were getting them, two in a day. It wasn't abnormal anymore to be getting people driving at these high rates of speed. But also going along with that were people, driving while they were impaired. So you had more left cars on the road, but you had more offenses that were occurring with those fewer cars, which again seemed to happen across the board. And then after COVID, everybody comes back, you have more cars back on the road again, but the behavior decreased slightly, but never went back to where you would expect it to have gone back to.
Right, right. And in terms of the incident over on Highway 125 that happened recently, are similar incidents like that stunting? Is that becoming more and more common there? Have there been any other incidents like that lately?
So I just had a look just in the last 6 months, and it's essentially on all highways. I know there was a one day last year near the end of the summer where just on the number four I had stopped a stunter, and the man was in his 80s, because you kind of want to pigeonhole and say, well, are these all young people? But this man was in his 80s. I had gotten him. I had dealt with him. The vehicle was seized, et cetera. I had dropped him off to a family member. And when I came back, now going in the opposite direction, I now get virtually within half a kilometer of the same location on the Highway 4. I had another stunter, but this young person, or this is a younger person, he's only 22. So in one day, you had the 80-plus-year-old man and you had the 22-year-old man almost in the exact same spot, both doing the same behavior. And I just kind of looked at like the last 6 months here, and just some of the ones that I highlighted, at least since August. We have 183 on the 105 highway, following 170 on the 125, another 170 on the 105, 165 on the 125, 166 on the 125, 165 on the 125, and then three the other day, which were 156, 160, and 170, also on the 125. So they're just in the last 6 months, just from our office that I found.
So this is kind of this area is sort of, it's a bad area then when it comes to stunting.
Well, yes. And again, I don't know that there's any specific, one area is worse than the other. I mean, the 125, because it's, it's got the two lanes, so people think they're more invincible, I suppose, on that highway, which is straighter. But, they don't realize, I'm a collision analyst as well, so they don't realize your car is trying to save you. If you have a collision, at the speed limit, and, you drive off the road for whatever reason, your car is trying to save you. If you have your seatbelt, your airbag, there's an excellent chance of survival at the posted speed limit, but that chance is dramatically decreased. Your car is trying at 170 to save you, but I can assure you that it's not going to do that, because you're too fast, and the physics and the damage to the human body, you can't take that level of impact usually and roll over, and then essentially, and also if you're not wearing your seatbelt, you're highly unlikely to survive that encounter. I don't know that I've seen anyone actually survive from a collision at that speed, particularly if you're unbelted.
Right, and that kind of gets into the next thing I wanted to ask you about, because I wanted to ask if you had a message for people who are driving too fast, and you kind of just talked a little bit about, those consequences of, if you're driving too fast, if you're not doing the right things like your seatbelt and all that kind of stuff. So is there any other message you wanted to share for people who are driving too fast, especially, at this time of year here in Cape Breton? The weather's starting to get bad. We had a snowfall 2 days ago. The roads are pretty bad. So is there any other message you wanted to share for people who are driving too fast?
Well, just essentially, I mean, to actually slow down, and just as an example, I had a driver that crashed one day in the snow, and I said, geez, how did you end up here in the median? And he said, well, the speed limit says it's 100. I was doing 100. And I said, I was coming here to help you, lights and sirens, and I wasn't doing 100 because the road is so bad. I said, just because the sign says you can do, a maximum of 100 doesn't mean you should be doing 100. Like, you should have, on that particular day, he should have been driving about 60 kilometers an hour max, because it's just the conditions were so poor. But, what we want to tell people is to think about not only themselves and what will happen, but to think about other people. And I've said that to several of the stunters that I've had personally. I've said, can you imagine that normal people, you would look to your left, you would look in your blind spot and see, hey, is there a car coming before I come out to pass? So normally you would look and you would say, geez, there's no car coming, I would pull out. But you wouldn't see the car coming at 170, because when you looked in your blind spot, he wouldn't be there. But when you pulled out, of course, if that person hits you at 170 kilometers, not only is he going to kill the people in his vehicle, but he's absolutely killing everyone, I guarantee it, in your vehicle. So maybe people need to think about other people as well, and the repercussions of what, not only injuring or killing themselves, but how would you want to live with the fact that you just killed a family of four because you were driving at 170 kilometers an hour to go where? And none of these people have any rational reason or excuse. People are flying home from work is often, I would say the majority of people, that you're rushing home for supper at 170 just because you feel like it. You know you're doing 170 because you're passing every single car. And if one of those other cars pulls out, like I said, the consequences are going to be fatal for yourself, but it's going to be fatal for everybody in there. So you can see the massive consequence of your actions, what you're doing. So there's really no rational reason to drive at those speeds. If the roads are clear and dry, I recommend people using their cruise control just to keep it down there and keep yourself from, drifting up into that ridiculous speed that, that you're going to. But I think we all have a responsibility, not only to ourselves, but everybody else that's on the highway, to kind of do a little better, because we are finding, even without the stunting, the speeds are definitely up there. And just in the last, I would say just this month alone, this unit has issued probably over 350 motor vehicle infraction tickets in this area, minimum, probably more so now. So like I said, the numbers are definitely up there. We are out there, and like I said, it's not worth it to yourself or to someone else. So I would just encourage people to slow down and think about what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. And is there any kind of a response coming, you know, and I'm thinking in terms of like, you know, increased patrols or more checkpoints, things like that. Is there anything like that coming up in response to this?
Well, I can just tell you, like, the patrols have been increased, and it's not uncommon. I know last week, I'm just back this week now, but when I was personally in last week, not only myself, but, you know, at any given point, you know, we have four and five cars out there at once, and we were literally having so many speeding cars, et cetera, that we were literally having, like, our dispatch acknowledges each one of us that goes, you know, out with a car, and they were literally like, hey, this car, you know, copying your traffic stop. Hey, this car, copy. And they were doing all they could just to keep up with us, because we were stopping so many cars, and we were on different highways at the same time. So like I said, the traffic stops are happening. We're out there. We're definitely issuing the tickets. We're really encouraging people that, like, one of the things people don't do is they have the need to keep your cell phone with you at all times. I understand taking your phone with you, but I encourage people, and it's amazing to see that people can't let it go for the time you're driving. Take that cell phone, put it in the back seat, so you're not encouraged to look at it. Because particularly on a poor highway, we all know our highways are in poor condition. We have rust, there's ice, there's snow. If you turn your head or you're not paying attention for a few seconds even to grab your phone or look at it, it's already too late, and you're already not going to be able to fix the fact that your vehicle's now gone out of control and you're heading for the ditch kind of thing. So if you just leave that phone in the back seat, there's nothing that can't wait till you get to where you're going. And then you're not encouraged to look at it or touch it because you don't have it in your reach. Put it in your bag, put it in your purse, throw it in the back seat, leave it there till you get where you're going, and then, you know, take it out and whatever you felt the need to do, you know, do it while you're not driving. It will make it a lot safer for everyone else on the road.
Well, Mike, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. This is a lot of good information. And yeah, like I said, thank you so much for taking the time.
No, I appreciate it. Have yourself a great day.
With Integrated Youth Services ramping up to open dialogues, Cora Perrigo catches up with one of their collaborators. Stefan Surfura is the Icelandic Prevention Model Project Manager at the Undercurrent Youth Center.
So the Icelandic Prevention Model is a methodology where our ultimate goal is to reduce the occurrence of youth alcohol and drug use in Glace Bay and New Waterford and surrounding communities. So we do that by bringing community together, hearing community input, and then making actual changes based on the community and youth input. Youth input is very important to us.
And why is it called the Icelandic Prevention Model?
So it actually originally started decades ago in Iceland when they found that they also had higher than average occurrences of youth alcohol and drug use. And so they did a lot of research into what would be best for their country, and they were able to successfully implement a ton of different strategies for prevention. And they had incredible success with it. And in fact, their current, as of 2023, their rates of youth substance use was down to 6% and 1% for alcohol and cigarette use, respectively.
So when you say work in the community like Glace Bay and New Waterford, what do you mean? How does that help prevent?
So our goal right now, we're very early on in the process. So we're just sort of figuring out what the gaps are in the community right now. But ultimately, our goal is to implement a survey into the schools. And between that and community guidance through our advisory groups, we've got three going right now. We want to make actual change. So following this process, we're very much in the early steps. There's a 10-step process with the Icelandic prevention model, and we're focusing right now on the first three until August. This is a federally funded initiative. So there's also stream two funding, which would be for steps 4 to 10. And those steps are more actually doing things. They are changing policy. So in Iceland, some things that they had success with were like they implemented a curfew with parental watch. They implemented a leisure card where students would get a leisure card loaded with a certain amount of money, and they would be able to take those to sports programs and completely be able to access the sign-up fee, the uniforms, maybe even like a band instrument. They would be able, those would all be covered. And that's what worked in Iceland. And so we're doing such a long setup to make sure that we get what's necessary in Cape Breton.
And what changes would you like to see? What would you personally like to see in the community?
I would like to see more community togetherness. I would like to bring families together. We've only had a couple of meetings with our advisory groups, but the common message that I'm hearing over and over again is that parents, guardians, and children need to be more involved and chat with each other more, do more family-oriented activities. And in that vein, we need to have more activities and structural supports in the community to facilitate youth and guardians engaging with one another in healthy and productive ways so that youth don't have a ton of free time and they don't know what to do with it, and so they look to alcohol and drugs.
And why is the focus on Glace Bay and New Waterford specifically?
So we're specifically looking there because of the recent study about child poverty rates. And we noticed that Glace Bay and New Waterford had extremely high rates. I mean, obviously, all of Cape Breton has quite high rates of child poverty. But we noticed that Glace Bay and New Waterford especially were struggling with that.
And what made you want to get involved with it?
I love community work. I love nonprofit work. I want to change the environment that kids grow up in so that maybe 10, 20 years in the future, we don't have a society where house parties are the norm for 15-year-olds. I feel very invested in the well-being of youth because I grew up in this system, in this like generational trauma where my grandparents, my parents, everybody that I knew, they all suffered the effects of opioid addiction back from even the mining days. And so I see the impact of it every day. And I think that our community could do so much better if we had more resources and more supports.
And are there ways, I know you said you're still in the early stages, that maybe community groups or community organizations could help get involved to help provide things like you said, the cards, the loaded cards to use at sports programs?
Yes. So we are super open to community involvement and collaboration. We want as many people to get involved and be in the know as possible. So you can always reach out through our Facebook page or by emailing me directly as the project manager, just at stefan@undercurrentyc.com. And of course, you can reach out to our Facebook page. You can reach out to our executive director, Trevor. And really, just as long as you can get in contact with us, we will find a way to make it work.
And I know when I spoke to Amanda with the Integrated Youth Services, Undercurrent seemed to be a partner with them or an eventual partner. Is that something, the IPM, that you're hoping to integrate into IYS as well?
I think that they are natural fits for one another because I feel like IYS is helping in the early stages of intervention, and I feel like the earlier we can get, the better. But I also acknowledge that right now our goal is prevention, but there's a lot of hurt actively being done, recently being done, and kids are hurting right now, and they need that stopgap. They need somewhere to be able to go while we try and change aspects of the community that are harmful. And so I think that it's a necessary aspect to have early protective measures as well as early intervention. So I feel like it's just a natural weaving in of multiple community supports.
And so if a family is interested in looking into IPM when it really gets started, how can they start those preventative measures at home?
Well, honestly, a lot of it is revolving around just spending time with your family. We want to promote spending time during weekends or during after school hours with your family, mutually promoting school, so encouraging youth to go to school, attend school, emphasizing the importance of it. And then I also think that there's a lot of work to be done in the schools. I think that it's going to be a really great opportunity for guardians and parents to interact more with the schools. We hope to have a lot of school involvement and school partnership. Really, a lot of it is just talking to your kids and seeing what they need. Like, are they wanting more sports programs? There's undercurrent free supports. We have lots and lots of free programming. We do sports. We do arts. We have family movie nights. Sometimes we have community events where we'll offer free meal and access to our community comfort closet, where folks can take however many clothes they want, whatever they need. Sometimes we even have access to hygiene supplies and pantry goods. And then I know another great resource is the Cape Breton Youth Project in Sydney. They have great resources for 2S LGBTQ plus youth. The Boys and Girls Club in Whitney Pier. There's lots of really great resources that I think could be taken advantage of by a family to access those services and grow closer with their children and realize that there are lots and lots to do in the community. And hopefully we'll keep building on those and make even more.
Cape Breton Regional Police say three local businesses unknowingly accepted fake $100 bills last week. Here's Constable Gary Frazier.
Well, we got calls from three different businesses, one in Membertou and two in Glace Bay, a garage and in a corner store, that they felt that the money just didn't look or feel right. And when the officers arrived and viewed it and examined it, determined that it was not real money, it was counterfeit.
Frazier says each clerk accepted the money, then on second thought, checked the bills later and noticed something wasn't right. He says when the police arrived at the businesses, they looked for some telltale signs of counterfeit bills.
The money, it is a polymer, very similar to our money, and it bears the same serial number on all the fake bills as GJR671008. And we just want the public and retailers to know that these are on the go now and to be aware of that.
Frazier says residents and businesses should take a moment to review any $100 bills for the meantime. He explains other ways to tell if the bills are real or not.
If you take the fake bill and you tilt it a certain way, the right way, you'll see at the top of the hologram, it says prop money, P-R-O-P money. And it's very faint. But you can see it, and that will tell you the difference. It's a little different in color than the real money. It's more reddish or orangish than the real money. But in an instant, if someone passed it to you, it is very, very good fake money.
Frazier says they don't know yet if the word prop appears because the bills were used in a film, TV show, or theatrical production. Meanwhile, he says they're looking for a man and a woman after reviewing security footage from one of the establishments.
We managed to get a license plate from a vehicle. We have, right now, we have a female suspect out of Halifax and a male suspect out of Glace Bay. So we're pursuing those, the tips that we've got and the information that we got, and the officers are investigating that.
Frazier's asking asking other businesses in the area to carefully check any cash used in transactions, and he says they should call the police if they notice anything suspicious.
Just if the retail businesses and people, just if you do get a $100 bill, you don't have to accept it, a business, and call the police if you think that it's counterfeit, and let us have a look at it and deal with it.
Frazier says some other businesses have already decided to refuse any $100 bills for the time being. Although some people say it's tempting to spend a lot of time at home in the winter, Will Roy, the board chair of the Sport and Social Club, is determined to get you out and enjoy the Warm Your Bones Festival. Dialogue's Cora Perrigo reports.
What inspired the start of this festival?
So the festival was inspired by an experience that I had in Vancouver, where they have a hot chocolate festival, and it's sort of a highlight of February when everyone's in the sort of winter doldrums. And I'm actually a big fan of winter, but really like encouraging people to explore and experience the good things about winter. So, you know, a mug of coffee or hot chocolate or a latte, I think, hits a little better in February than maybe a hot August day. So it's time to celebrate that.
Was the inspiration also to kind of maybe add something for the community to do between the Christmas kind of rush and the summer?
Yeah, absolutely. So we look at the sort of calendar of the year, and I think a lot of us talk about how Cape Breton is so great in the summer, and we pretty much get stuff going from like May right through until Christmas, and then we've got a nice big lull where there's not necessarily a lot to get us out of the houses, go see friends and get social, and really wanted to sort of fill that gap as well.
And how did you get involved in it?
So this was an idea that me and my partner Aaron had, and I've been talking about it with a couple of different cafes over the last couple of years, and over last year we got sort of a better name, Warm Your Bones, and this year I sort of finally bit the bullet and asked some people to help out. We got a wonderful logo made by Allison Uma, and once that happened, I really had to just run with it and actually make sure it happened, so...
And what can people expect from the festival?
So what people can expect from the festival is sort of a week of really great drink specials, hopefully some soups, things like that that are nice and cozy. But then interspersed with that, sort of featuring Sport and Social Club, we want to make sure that there's a bunch of events that people can attend. A bunch of those are still being finalized, but we're looking at partnerships with a bunch of crafters from our community, hopefully some things like a paint night, crochet, all sorts of things like that. And then we're sort of capping it off with a street party in partnership with Downtown Sydney Development Association on the 15th of February. So we can get people out on the street, enjoying, into the different places, lots of activities to keep everybody happy and out and about in the downtown.
Why do you feel hosting things like this is important?
I think it's really important for people to get social, especially... You know, I think it's been a while since, you know, we say COVID sort of happened. It's still happening to some, for some. But I think it made it really easy for us to sort of hunker down and stay home and not get out and build those social connections that I think we all need. So giving opportunities or giving reasons for people to get out and make that chance to connect over coffee or, you know, actually meet up with friends you haven't seen in a while, I think is a really important part of what makes this community a great place to live.
Is there anything else coming from the Sport and Social Club that people can expect?
So during the day of the 15th, we are going to be hosting Street Ringette. We recently started up a Try It Ringette series, which I think isn't really a popular sport here. But that's really great. Most of the activities that Sport and Social Club runs are specifically geared towards adults 19 plus. But of course, in the case of a street festival and a bunch of this opportunities, we're really hoping to see families out enjoying themselves as well.
What is ringette?
So ringette is a ice sport that is sort of like hockey with some different rules that are enforced, you know, sort of enforced passing. It's played with a stick and a ring instead of a stick and a puck. And it was a really popular sport back in Edmonton, particularly for women. And so when my partner moved out here and there was nowhere for her to play ringette, we really are glad to bring it back. So.
And how has the, like the downtown Charlotte Street, the businesses that are getting involved in this festival, how's their reception been?
It's been really good. We have a lot of businesses that have expressed interest, particularly around the downtown. We're definitely open to having businesses participate from outside Sydney, outside the downtown. But I think we've got a really nice concentration of sort of cafes that this really hits the mark with.
Do you hope this to be an annual thing?
I am very hopeful that this is the first of many. We have been having really good success. I think a lot of interest so far in what this festival can be. And I'm really hoping that, you know, as much as I hope this is a really great success, I'm hoping it's maybe the smallest one that we have for many years to come.
Is there anything else you would like to, like, kind of pie in the sky ideas of things you'd like to do in the same kind of vein?
I have a ton of ideas that I would love to pursue. A lot of it just comes down to how much time that I have, and I probably can't narrow it down to just one. So I know I've got a really great group of volunteer board members at the Sport and Social Club. We're up to 12, which is great, and then plus a ton of other volunteers to make these things happen. But I also encourage everybody else who's interested in this type of thing to, you know, take a leap and do it yourself as well. So,
and are people able to even outside of this festival be involved in the Sport and Social Club on a volunteer basis?
Absolutely. Sometimes we struggle to coordinate the onboarding of volunteers because pretty much every single one of us on the board is a volunteer ourselves, holding down a full-time job of our own. But the volunteer support is really the only thing that keeps Sport and Social Club running. And if you don't know, we operate different events, I think six different events every week at this point, five of them being a variety of sports. And welcoming fun first, and pretty much the only requirement is that you have to be 19, trying to make a fun space where, you know, adults can connect and play.
And where can people find information about that if they want to participate in the events?
You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at sscc.cbrm. You can also follow us at sportandsocial.ca, sign up for a newsletter. We're sort of on all those platforms, and it's great. If you're looking for more information about the festival as well, you can find it at warmyourbones.ca.
And do you have anything to say to someone who may be interested in going out to the festival but isn't quite sure?
I really encourage you to go out. There should be something for everybody. On the 15th, we'll have lots of activities, lots of ways that you can get involved. But it can be as simple as going in, grabbing yourself a tea, and just enjoying sort of a busy day downtown with hopefully some snow falling.
So kind of the main idea of it is just to get people out and appreciating their downtown area.
Yeah, absolutely. And appreciating the activities that you could have. So things like crochet, reading a book, sort of anything like that, that, you know, gives that cozy vibe during the winter.
Cape Breton Partnership is an economic development organization promoting the island as a place to live, work, and invest. Here are a few more bills to talk about. A Coast Morning host, Bill Bradley, and one of the partnership's officers, Bill Culp.
Thanks for having me, Bill. You know, it's really exciting to be here on your show here on the Coast FM. I love this station and I love my job with the Cape Breton Partnership, and I'd love to tell you a bit more about it. So I always introduce myself when I say, hi, my name is Bill Culp and I'm the Creative Economy Development Officer with the Cape Breton Partnership. And Bill, you know what they usually say?
No, what?
Well, they ask me, well, what exactly is the creative economy? And so I'll say something like, well, you know, the creative economy that incorporates the music industry. And then they'll stop and they'll look at me sometimes and they'll say, yeah, I figured from your long hair, you're probably a musician. You know, that's one of the things you get. But of course, the creative economy encompasses so much more than just the music industry. It also incorporates theater arts, performing arts. It includes photography, creative writing, fine arts and crafts, and one area that sort of incorporates all of that, the film industry.
There's a lot of things happening here now with the film industry and so many positive things happening. As you know, being a newcomer here to Cape Breton Island, a movie here a couple of years ago, there's a lot of talent to pull from here on Cape Breton Island.
There's no doubt that Cape Breton is a very, very creative place. And that was one of the things that attracted me here. You know, my wife and I, we always wanted to get a beautiful place on the water. I had been out here on tour numerous times. So when I got here, and I saw what it was all about. I bought a house in 2018. So it's been more than a couple of years. We fixed up the house, and in 2019, I moved out here.
If you're somebody in the industry and you're thinking, okay, well, that's all well and good. I want to move on to that next step. I'm guessing that's where you come in and give them the right context and kind of lead them in the next direction.
Sure thing, Bill. You know, with my job, I like to say that my job is the three C's. Number one, I connect people. Number two, I consult with people. And number three, I'm very much a catalyst for the creative economy. So if you're an artist or you're an organization or a business, I also work very much with educational institutions, including high schools, NSCC, CBU. That's a part of my job. And of course, I work with all three levels of government, municipal, provincial, and federal. So all of it comes into this huge thing we call the creative economy. I apply the three C's to it, and I'm a very busy guy. And I'm eager to meet with people and help them in whatever way that I can. Cape Breton Partnership is a fantastic organization. I think a lot of people misunderstand exactly what it is. I mean, we do economic development, certainly for Cape Breton Island, but we have people that work for immigration and newcomers. Of course, you had Ocean on here last week. We've got people that work for each municipality in economic development. Then, of course, we have my unique job within the creative economy. So if you're a musician, if you're an actor, if you're an artist, reach out to me. It's just bill@capebretonpartnership.com, right? How easy is that? My name is Bill. I work for the Cape Breton Partnership. So bill@capebretonpartnership.com. I'd love to hear from you. Or if you've got a business or you've got a music festival or you're new to town and you want to be introduced to the creative sector here on the island, I'm more than ready, willing, and able to help you in whatever way I can.
What is the charge for this? It's free, right?
That's right. You know, the Cape Breton Partnership gets their funding from different streams. We have, I think, something like 175 private businesses that contribute to us to do our job to help develop the business world and the economy here on the island. We get some funding from the province and some funding from the municipalities and from some of the indigenous communities as well. So we have a broad base of funding. So you can contact a guy like me. I can help you as best I can, and I would love to do so. It's generally free of charge. It's a great service. I encourage people that they could use the help of the Cape Breton Partnership to just reach out to us and let's see what we can do.
And you've been around the market here, not just locally, but right across the country.
Yeah.
So you've got lots of contacts that you can call on them and move you on to the next step.
Yeah, Bill, my background is certainly in music and in theater. I've done a lot of work in the film industry. And during COVID, when everything was shut down, I took the time to write a book about my long career in the industry. It's called Have Guitar, Will Travel. And my good buddy Ron, Breton Books, of course, published it. And so it was such a great thing to do during COVID. And that writing of that book also introduced me to what the Cape Breton Partnership was all about. And it resulted in the job that I have right now post-COVID, where I've been working there for 3 years as the Creative Economy Development Officer for the Cape Breton Partnership.
So once again, if folks want to reach out to you with the Cape Breton Partnership, what can they do to get a hold of you right now?
They can send me an email to bill@capebretonpartnership.com. I'd love to hear from you. I want to plug the workforce development opportunities that are coming to Cape Breton Island via the busy film industry that has been coming here ever since last year when Premier Tim Houston announced the distant location incentive that incentivizes film companies to come to more remote places outside of Halifax. And so we've seen quite a number of productions really just exploding here. It's got tremendous momentum. And I'm hoping to develop the crews and cast members available for that booming industry as much as I can. So if you're interested in working in film, whether you're a carpenter or an electrician, or you're just interested in being a security guard or a driver, you know, doing hair and makeup, or if you're an actor or want to be one of the background extras, they call them, by all means, reach out to me and I can help point you in the direction of the Cape Breton film industry. I'd also like to say kudos to my good buddy, Mr. Patrick Doyle, who helped with a lot of the work that I did with the film industry to encourage it to come here.
Perigo wraps up the program for us this week with an interview enlightening us about a new cafe for downtown Sydney.
It started as Freshy, like the franchise. What made you want to change to a cafe?
Kind of just the market and what the market was really looking for. I think Freshy was a great experience, kind of a crash course in business to do a franchise, but it was fun to be able to have the opportunity to be a little bit more creative and offer, yeah, what the market was looking for a bit, coffees and treats and things. So it's a little bit more of a fun business to be operating.
And besides the business aspect, what, like, why a cafe?
Because everybody needs a little treat, and it's so fun to be able to serve up the little treats and the little breaks in the day that you can offer to people, and to create a fun, really cozy environment that I felt like I knew that I was missing in my downtown community. And I thought, you know, if I'm missing it, probably someone else is. You know, other people will be looking for a space like that as well. And so far, it's been received really well.
So the name Two Friends Cafe, it's a very friendly name. Is there like a story behind that?
It's funny. I mean, not so much. I was definitely struggling to come up with a name and a brand, and I know that's a really big, important part of it. At the time, you know, when I was creating the cafe, you know, I was talking with my friends about it all, and I wanted to... Yeah, create a space that you would want to go somewhere with your friends and hang out with your friends. And then we were kind of brainstorming the names, and it's really hard to come up with something that's good, that has potential for strong branding. And we were thinking about how a lot of the time ships have really cool names. And anyway, we were looking up shipwrecks off the coast of Cape Breton, and there was a ship that wrecked off the coast of Lewisburg called Two Friends. And I know it's probably bad juju to name your business after a shipwreck, but we thought it was kind of just a really cute name. So we kind of just, I kind of just went with that.
Do you have any kind of events planned for the space? I know the Warm Your Bones Festival is coming up. Are you participating in that?
I think it's such a wonderful idea. It's so normal for everyone to really just want to stay inside and not go out this time of year. So it's nice to see someone that wants, or to see a group of people that want to do an event that will get people out more with their friends, supporting other local businesses, and kind of all the local businesses supporting each other and promoting in that way. So I'm so excited for the Warm Your Bones Festival. I'm also participating in Soup Fest. I don't know if you've heard about Soup Fest. I'm really excited to participate in that one as well. Yeah, I'm always open to, you know, working with other community members on any events at all. So really looking forward to those two, that at least those two coming up.
So you said that you're participating in Soup Fest. What's your contribution?
So yeah, we're contributing soup. So there's all kinds of vendors that are going to come and bring soup. Anyone who wants to go, it's $10 for advance tickets or $15 at the door. And that gets you in, and you get to try a sample of all of the soups and vote on your favorite soup. And it's just going to be an awesome event. So if you love soup and you don't have anything going on the holiday, February 17th, we'd love to see everyone come down and try the soups. All of the proceeds go to the Boys and Girls Club. So it's also, yeah, for a great cause as well.
And I know you said that the public has been really responsive to Two Friends. How have the other downtown businesses been?
Oh, you know what? I feel very fortunate to be part of this business community. Yeah, I felt that people were really excited and supportive with the new business idea. And yeah, overall, just excitement and support is really what I felt from the other community members. So that was a really nice feeling. It's always been like that since I did move home and started getting into business. So I always feel very fortunate to be able to be part of it all. I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to, you know, be part of the community and provide a positive experience through someone's day. And I always found, whether it's a tea or a coffee or a little treat, to brighten someone's day. And I feel very grateful to have the opportunity to do that. And that's always what I strive to do. When people spend their time, maybe their one break of the day or their one time where they can't through the day, that they can take a break from their, you know, busy lives or busy day to come in for a treat or a good experience. I feel grateful to be able to provide that. So it's always what I am striving to do.
So is that kind of the inspiration? And being here, it's very cozy. Was that kind of the idea, as a place for someone to relax during their break during the day?
Yeah, definitely. It's all about the vibes. All about making the space, you know, cozy and warm and inviting. I want people to feel at home here. You know, I made a gallery wall with lots of local art, but also art that, you know, reminded me of, you know, friendship. And yeah, so just creating a really warm and happy environment. It's really nice to see people and that actually want to come and hang out in the space for a while. So that's definitely the goal. And we have board games here. And, you know, as we grow, I'll be coming up with more, you know, ideas to make the space even more so. But yeah, so far it's been good for that.
Personally, what's your favorite item on the menu?
Ooh, that's so hard because it changes all the time. I love our sandwiches. I'm very much a sandwich person, a savory person. I would say probably the antipesto sandwich. It's on a really good focaccia bread. I would say that with a soup is always a soup and sandwich, you know, nothing better.
And so what would you say to someone who wants to come out to Two Friends, keep seeing it on social media, but hasn't come out?
Oh, you should definitely come and check it out. We got something for everyone here. All kinds of treats, whether you're into sweets or savory, really great sandwiches, coffees. Yeah, everyone needs a little treat through the day or the week. And you should, you know, bring a friend or two friends and come and hang out. It's a great space to hang out in or take anything out to take home to people as well. But yeah, we'd love to see you.
That's all for Dialogue this week. If you have an idea for an interview on the program, send us an email to news@coastalradio.ca. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill McCush.